we hate them.
Shout out, what's her name?
Oh, God. Amanda.
There you go. Mm.
I knew during that game, that's part of, you know, it makes it that much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Social media for everybody and everyone, like, in our space. Anything you say can and will be used against yep. you if it's wrong. But most of y'all don't have someone that actually is like a professional documenter. And every time I know she's going to get something, and not something, there's going to be at least 10, you know, 5 to 10, if not more, things that she finds after for every situation. So definitely has changed the landscape for me on Twitter, for sure.
It's safe to
like
say
when they lose, I'm in trouble.
She's got notifications turned on for both of us, I'd say.
Yeah, you get it, too. You definitely get it, too. You've taken a little heat off, like, what was it? I guess during the playoffs, somewhere along the way, like, you took a little heat off of me,
mm-hmm.
you know, when Texas kept advancing in that playoff. So
I still feel like I was pretty close. If A&M would have beaten Texas,
yeah.
then I was dead on. All I said was A&M will finish above Texas in the SEC standings, and it literally came down to one game.
That's what I said, too. I went back, so I said 9-3 for A&M to start the year. So I'm like, well, it's just a game off. But in the heat of battle,
yeah.
you know, Shane, they get you, and that's the other thing she can do is get me to say things like emotionally in response that I shouldn't.
Right.
So I went. Then I went 9-2 going into the Texas game. Beat Texas 10-2 is the math that comes out to. So, but I didn't think the Aggies were going to lose to Auburn. That was actually the one that. Through last season to me off course, but yeah, you were pretty damn close too.
The worst part, I think that's
Wisconsin guy. I believe. Ooh. I mean, sorry, Minnesota.
That's even worse.
One of the worst parts is like when you know you got the game, you got saved draft tweets ready to fire off, and it's just your next day you're deleting them, and that would have been really good.
I don't even delete them. I feel like that's just a like self torturing. You know, exercise to do. Like, yeah. I'll just leave them. One day, maybe we'll go look. That would be a fun content day is to go look at all my bookmarks, all my saved, like, all the bookmarks I have that I'm not going to go through. And, you know, it's kind of sad just to go. It's like one tier as you go, I have to delete that. Damn, that would have been fire. I have to delete that. I'm not doing that shit, Shane. I'm just going to look ahead and not look back. So last night's game. It did. It, you know, a day later, like, what sucks is you lost 2 of 3 to that team. They're not yeah. that good. Texas fans will tell you it's their worst team in decades. That's completely false. They're going to go to the tournament. They've had multiple teams that haven't made the tournament. They've fired multiple coaches since Rick Barnes. And, you know, they got a lottery pick on that team.
Yeah.
I mean, a top 5 pick probably in Trey Johnson and some other really good players. I think for them, just when I watch them, it's probably why they're going to move on from Rodney Terry. The pieces just don't fit into a true identity. And maybe they can turn it on now and they've kind of found some of that. But, you know, they got the one guy back from injury who I thought was a real catalyst for them yesterday until he fouled out. But A&M, I do think the pieces fit in tier 6 under Buzz. I do think those pieces fit for a team that can make, you know, make it into that second weekend and then maybe make things really interesting. But what cost them yesterday is some of the same stuff, you know, that if they do get knocked out, I think we're going to revisit it and go, you know, it's U of H last year when they could have knocked off the one seed and they took them to overtime. It was missed free throws. It was kind of long scoring droughts, longer than the norm, and then you know, a lot of clanged 3-pointers, and all 3 of those things came true yesterday, and it still took double overtime. So I did like that A&M treated that like the rivalry like it should be, you know, even though Texas had a lot more to play for, but B, they played it like it was an elimination March Madness game, and it wasn't an elimination game, so I don't know. Maybe they'll do all right getting some more rest. They sell out so much defensively, and with you know, in the effort category to sometimes maybe make up for some shortcomings.
Yeah.
That I think, you know, I didn't want them to lose to Texas. Okay. And dropping 2 out of 3, that's the sport they should have won in this year. You know, that and then baseball, they got to get the ship righted starting, you know, starting now. But football in year one under Mike Elko, it was, that was going to be a tough, even though they were playing at home, year one under a head coach with Texas in what was that, year 4 under Sark and heading towards the playoff. That was a tough ask, more so than I think these other sports where you're more established. So we'll see how that goes.
It's fair to say they collapsed down the stretch, the Aggie football team. But if you were to ask any A&M fan the day they hired Mike Elko, the final regular season game, you're playing for the right to go to the SEC championship, I think every damn one of them would have signed up for that, right?
Yeah, and that's there's a lot of nuance in there in what you're saying, because the answer is hell yeah. Absolutely. But you also, if you would have told them 8-4, you would have had people split.
Mm-hmm.
And some people would say, hey, we're tired of 8-4. And I get it. They hadn't been 8-4 lately, though. They were 7-5 under Jimbo. They were 5-7. Then they were 8-4. So it's been like Jimbo's last 3 years, they weren't. Now this year with Elko, now you're 4 years into it. So yeah, you're tired of that. But the last 2 years had been worse than that. And 8-4 is interesting when you go 7-1 to start it. And, you know, you're in a tie game with 2 minutes left to the team that played for the national title. Is that one loss? You really humiliate 2 top 10 teams. I know it's LSU and Missouri, but when do we stop moving the target? Like, this is one thing I always get into with like Texas fans and even some A&M fans. How are we counting top 10 wins here? Are you guys, you're Tennessee guy.
Right.
When you go back and you say, man, Josh Heupel's beaten X number of top 10 teams, or if I'm saying, man, what's your team?
Tennessee.
Oh, you are too. See, yeah. He actually, like, I feel
like, he's the homer.
See, like, that's
I
not
just
right.
Graduated yeah. from
like
school.
You know? Yeah. I'm just
so Tennessee, but let's say, you know, Billy Napier, they're holding against him because he's only beat X number of top 10 teams. Like, we all know what that means.
Yeah.
When you played them, they were ranked in the top 10,
yeah.
Period. Like, that's the rule. That's what we do.
Right.
I don't care what happened to Missouri. By the way, I think they won 10 games this year.
They did.
But I don't care what happened to LSU. You beat them when they were top 10. We don't change it after the fact. Nobody does that. No one ever has, and no one ever will. So you win 2 top 10 games. You get to 7-1. I think LSU is somewhat of a rival, not a traditional, but there's a lot of competition and hate there. It was a better start than I think anyone could have anticipated. You showed a ton of promise, and then, like you said, you just completely stumbled down the stretch. But you did play in a final game to get to Atlanta. The crazy part is, had they beaten Auburn, a bad Auburn team, they would have played Texas even losing to them, which is mind blowing. And I think that would have been way too much of a backdoor your way into that game than I would have preferred, unless you'd have told me they'd have beat them.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you took the field in game 12, where if you won, you were going to the SEC title game. That has not happened ever at A&M. And I don't think that's something to brag about. It's not like the greatest stat in 13 years, but that's the first time they've done that. So there's plenty of things to look at and go, okay. And then you have to look at it and go, they did that with 3 guys that got invited to the combine, all at the same position, D-line. Oh, it was such vitriol and everybody going crazy when they lost that South Carolina game. Like, well, yeah, with all the investment and money A&M puts into it and the commitment, I think they should be ahead of South Carolina, you know, in terms of the SEC pecking order. And they historically have been. But on the year when South Carolina, really, in my opinion, beat LSU, that bullshit call with the pick six and
yep.
and Sellers getting hurt and could have beat Bama in Bryant-Denny. That was a damn good football team with 11 guys that went to the combine. To A&M's three. Like, I think people don't realize, like, Mike Elko, and a lot of it has to do with that 22 class we've talked about a lot, didn't walk into, like, a bunch of first-team All-SEC juniors and seniors like a lot of these teams had. So he had work to do, and I think if you really break down the season, it was a – if you just want to keep it simple, was it a positive, encouraging season one or negative, discouraging? You have to say positive and encouraging if you're being honest. I know what the finish looked like, but I'm telling you right now, and so much of that was that Auburn game. That changed the feel, I think, for so many people, and I get it. You beat Auburn. You are going in the SEC title game. You are playing Texas again. You are going into that game 9-2. And, you know, you're finishing 9-3 in Atlanta in year one. To lose that one, 4th and 2, whatever. I think it was 4th and 2 or 4th and 3. And you let the QB scramble for a first down. I've already forgotten his name. You let him scramble for a first down. And then you have the 2-point conversion that you don't get. So many chances to win that game, and you couldn't get it done. So that one changed, I think, how people view season one. But I think when you really start to dig into it, it was encouraging.
But season one, we got some folks out here that think Florida's going to be significantly better this season because of the way they ended their season. Mm-hmm. And it felt like they kind of put down A&M because how they ended theirs. And I would weigh that A&M had a better season last year, but Florida has that momentum going into, you know, this next year with DJ. So I'm just curious, with the second year, now you've got your quarterback shirt up. We're not in a quarterback race or controversy. You got a second year OC. Do you think that there's a monumental step in that offensive side of football?
I think there needs to be, first of all, because it should. Everything you just said, second year in OC, returning starting quarterback that a year ago probably didn't think there was any way he was going to play at this time last year, then started most of the SEC schedule. I think he started all but two. He started 5 of 8. He didn't play Missouri. He didn't play Mississippi State. He finished LSU. So 6 of 8 games, really, he played in and essentially finished. Should be a totally different quarterback. And I think people around the conference, there's so many of these guys you want to talk about up at the top and who's getting replaced, and those are the big storylines. So I understand where Marcel Reed's not a monster storyline, and I'm not guaranteeing he will be, but I'm saying he absolutely could be. If he makes that jump, he's got you look at if you just look at his highlights, and you also realize he wasn't generally just slinging the ball around and turning it. You know, he wasn't a turnover machine. He's a really smart kid. He's here right now. He's with his dad. Here in town during spring break. Was at the game.
He's from around here. Right?
Yeah. Was at the game yesterday, and he's a great kid and leader. People around here know he's a winner in all sports. So combine that, Shane, with returning 5 O-line starters, I think no fewer than 3 of whom will get drafted this year after this season, 5 O-line starters plus 2 backups that were starters. You have 7 guys with, like, more than a season of starting experience coming back on your O-line. You've got Le'Veon Moss, Reuben Owens, E.J. Smith back. You signed 2 really talented freshmen. I think the tight end room looks to be the most improved unit in terms of personnel on this team. And then you went and got Casey Concepcion out of NC State. That was a big battle with Bama. And, you know, he's a playmaker. He's pretty electric, and he's already shown it. And then you went and got Mario Craver, who did some nice things and is really fast from Mississippi State. So, man, I don't see a reason why they shouldn't be really good offensively. And I think it's going to start with that O-line in the ground game, which should really allow Marcel to take a big step in year 2.
And it could be that Florida game. I think I think that's the first SEC game for both of them. Last year, that was a great performance by Reed, and that was kind of like, all right, A&M's, they're legit.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we got fired Billy Napier. Of course, they turned it around. But again, this year, playing in College Station, that's going to be a big crossroads games perhaps for both of them.
I think crossroads games for A&M next year, I think damn near all of them are at home. The one on the road to me might be Arkansas. That might be the road game where you're like, because the other ones are Texas, LSU, and Baton Rouge, where A&M's never won. Texas should be a top five, they will be a top five preseason pick. Man, I think that road game at Arkansas, because it's no longer at Jerry World, where A&M won 12 out of 13, which is an insane number. Especially because it's not like...
That's why they're not playing it there anymore.
Actually, no. Jerry wanted to keep playing it, which I don't understand. He kept having to give that trophy to all these A&M coaches. But it's wild, 12 out of 13, when the team winning the 12 isn't like Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State. Like, it's A&M that we just talked about has historically been in that kind of 8-4 mode. And they just... To own any other football team in the SEC is pretty wild. They used to own South Carolina. Carolina's won it's probably every other game the last maybe six.
You don't have to tell us. Tennessee, Florida is basically the same thing.
True, that's
Florida's,
right.
Florida's
almost
direction.
This year had it, or last year.
That is. Didn't somebody have one like that over Kentucky too? Was it Florida over Kentucky for the longest time?
Yeah, like 35 something years.
That's crazy. Nope. Imagine just literally getting... See, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say... Which camera am I looking at? I'm not going to say that because I know what you people... We know what everyone, all the usual suspects on Twitter are going to say. I was going to say, imagine, and this has not happened to me, imagine getting old watching your team never beat another team. I mean, some people might say that's been since 2010... And now they're not going to play till 2025. It's been like 15 years since A&M's beat Texas, but they've only played twice in that window.
Right.
But imagine 35 years and you're sitting there as like a 9-year-old crying when Florida beats your Kentucky Wildcats. And the next day you look up and you're like married with kids in your mid 40s or you're 50 and you still never beaten.
Yeah.
You've never beaten them. I was at the Detroit Lions game when they won a playoff game for the first time in like 50 years. And you had fathers and sons crying, people on the streets crying. They're like the parties. I'll tell you what, Shane, this was your scene. I mean, like I go upstairs. There's a guy doing like laps in a wheelchair around the dance floor. I don't even know how he got up there. There wasn't an elevator. They clearly carried him up. There was this is why I said it, Shane's scene. I don't know why I put you in that.
You started dancing, with wheelchair. So I'm interested wheelchair to see where guy. This goes.
Well, it gets better. There's a girl. I saw one girl wearing a Detroit Lions jersey, the number 0, and she's throwing up, and the shirt says 0. And then on the nameplate says Days Sober. And she was living up to the jersey. But there was this one girl walking around, and I'm like, I did a double take. I'll show y'all the video when we're done. But she's wearing as an accessory with her outfit, it's like 0 degrees out, jumper cables in the bar. Have you ever seen a woman... just with jumper cables draped over her neck out partying? And I asked her and she said, no, this somebody will need these tonight. And she's like, I'll make a little money off of it. Okay. So these Detroit people are doing that because they won a playoff game. Imagine never beating your rival team. I don't know how I got off on that tangent.
I mean, cause we were like that with Tennessee and Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
It just, my grandfather, I remember watching it when that's a game you just knew you're going to win.
Yeah.
That's a game that tickets were given away to people at church or, it's like, hey, why don't you go to the Kentucky game, But when you lose it.
You win one of those dance-offs and you win tickets. Yeah, like, what are those people? Is that guy, that Kentucky dude?
Yeah, that's right. If you upgrade your super meal, at McDonald's, you get a pair of Kentucky tickets. But the bad part was when you lost that game, then all of a sudden, it's like, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
That's immediate fireable offense. It doesn't matter what happened before or after. Well,
it's so true, because like A&M with the Arkansas thing, and Elko's in year one, and they go up there to Dallas, and that wasn't a terrible Arkansas team this year, and you know, it wasn't. And there was a little bit of a weird feel to it, because you also have Bobby Petrino up there,
mm-hmm.
who had left here and gone back, and you're like, man. And you're in a dogfight in the fourth quarter, and they gave a lot of teams, you know, tough games this year.
Beat Tennessee.
I forgot about that. The hell, dude.
Jeez. Pick on Shane, dude.
Yeah, I remember
back in my wheelchair.
Spinning. On the dance floor, dancing with jumper cable. I did say that was your scene. That was ridiculous. But I think the games for A&M, you mentioned how big Florida. That game against Florida will be. And by the way, it will be probably should be pretty fun to watch, like, Lagway v. Reed at Kyle Field. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Lagway was so close probably multiple times to becoming an Aggie. And you know, that where he's from is about an hour, barely over an hour away from College Station. He was at countless A&M games over the years. So that'll be a fun one, but a decisive one. The other ones, I think, are the three home games. It's Florida, who the Aggies beat. It's South Carolina, who they lost to, and it's Auburn. Like, those three games at home are going to be hard, but if you're trying to get where you want to get, you need to beat those teams at Kyle Field.
Yeah,
I don't care if they're ranked 7, if they're unranked, like somewhere in there. I don't think those teams are national title contenders by any stretch.
No, but I was going to say, if things break right for all three of those, I think those fan bases expect a potential playoff run.
Yeah, I could see
next
that.
Next year.
I couldn't see all three of them
right.
getting there. But right. yeah, I think individually, if I was a fan, well.
I mean, South Carolina almost did it.
To me, Auburn, I'm a little further off on.
He loves them.
You like the Jackson Arnold experiment?
Yeah.
I think he's got a ton of potential.
I love the weapons that Arnold has behind him or around him this mm-hmm. year, as he did last year.
Yeah, I mean, look, Lambert Smith did a lot of damage in mm-hmm. that A&M game, but Cam Coleman is...
Dude, that wide receiver room may be the best wide receiver room in the country at the end of the year.
They have the potential. And look, that one hurt. It had to hurt the Aggies. Probably would have hurt Jimbo more, but like, well, Elko... You know, the A&M finished a really close second to Auburn for Lambert Smith out of Penn State. And then
they had Cam Coleman
was committed forever. Now, do I really think he was going to sign if they kept Jimbo after a 7-5 season? No. I don't think you were pulling him out of Alabama for that. But you'd have had a chance. I don't believe we'd have seen that happen. But point being, he was committed forever. So, but yeah, I love that. Durkin's done a good job there. I thought he did a fine job at A&M. I didn't think he was special, but I also didn't think he deserved the criticism he got. Jackson Arnold's interesting, though. I never loved him. I thought maybe that 5-star was a little much. I mean, I thought he's a really good prospect. Don't get me wrong. It's not.
He's from Texas, right?
Yeah. Denton. So. Yeah, I didn't Ryan, I guess, or was it Guy or Sam, I'm forgetting. But I didn't want him. I don't mean he wasn't a high-end prospect.
Yeah.
But I thought 5-star and what people were anointing him didn't feel like it matched what I was seeing. And then he goes up to Oklahoma, and that obviously went bad. I think he's a lot better. And I guess you obviously do, too, to say that. I think he's a lot better than what we saw in Norman.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's a great pick for him to go to Auburn, but I still don't. I don't suspect they'll make that jump. I think it's more set up for like, hey, this is South Carolina's year, more so than those other two. But Gamecocks lost a lot too, and we mentioned those 11 draft picks. It's not like they're not like Ohio State and Texas lost probably 14.
Mm-hmm.
I said 11 draft
but they're
picks.
Built,
combine.
They're built for that.
They're built and recruit for that annually. I don't know that South Carolina does. So point being, I don't think any of those three are going to be juggernauts. I wouldn't surprise me if two of them are playoff contenders. you got to beat those kind of teams at Kyle Field in year two with a returning quarterback if you want to get where you want to get, which is you want to be that playoff contender. Or not contender, you want to get in there. And if people say, well, A&M can't make that jump, I said, well, they sure as hell can't if they don't beat those kind of teams at home. So that's where it needs to get. Look, their home losses last year were to Notre Dame that played for the national title, where they dropped it in the final 2 minutes, and then Texas, 17-7, a team that played in the semis. Look, Texas won that game decisively. Had A&M been able to get a yard on three tries, that's 17-14 with 5 or 6 minutes left, and that place is going nuts. I'm not saying the Aggies would have won because I think over 60 minutes, it was clear that Texas was a better team. Over the course of the season, they were a better team. But if they'd got that damn yard on three tries, shit would have gotten really interesting.
Yeah.
And speaking of me catching hell, that yard, that goal line stand and that play, and it was over and over and over and over. And it was funny because I went to the Cotton Bowl, and I got to witness the you know, them getting a taste of that, not being able to get a yard from 3 yards out, because they won that A&M game because they could stop, and they lost that Ohio State game and probably a national title because they couldn't get that yard. And the greatest offensive mind in football starts dialing up his wizardry down there when it mattered most. Just saying.
See, how do you make the Final Four?
That's going to get me.
Well, let me follow up on that. How do you make the Final Four and you don't have a signature win?
It's weird, right? And I give them credit because a couple teams, you know, like what was, and you correct me, I haven't thought about this at all. What was Penn State's signature win to get there? They beat Boise, right?
Boise and SMU. SMU at home.
And they didn't play. Yeah, we already did the SMU thing. Shane's got them as the next
He's going to get his master's at SMU
private program.
My dynasty online with SMU right now.
We talked about it. I like what SMU's doing. I root for SMU. I like Dallas is my.
But isn't that silly though? We can say that about two teams. Maybe that's the best proof that like the playoff structure is just asinine right now.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think it's proof also that the conferences are too big. Mm-hmm. And they need to figure out this damn scheduling.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I see him, I might ask Greg Sankey today or this week, like, what? Like, just make it 9 games. I mean, and I know there are coaches that don't like it. Like, you know, I know you're all trying to protect your jobs. Just stop being bitches and play 9 games conference. Like, the fans will love it. There's a 12-team playoff. It's eventually probably going to be 16. You're over here on one hand trying to guarantee that you get 4 in every year anyway.
Yeah.
Forget about if you're not among the top 4 in your conference, how can you argue and complain that you should have a chance to win the national title? This is not March Madness. Just do it. Like, it'll help. It'll help.
It's bigger than the coaches.
Yeah.
These guys ain't going to be.
They come and go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the right way to determine who are the best teams from the league. And I'm not saying that Texas wasn't one of the 3 best teams in that conference last year. They were probably second behind Georgia. I think Texas Ole Miss would have been a hell of a fun game to watch, but Ole Miss lost to a couple teams that Texas beat anyway. So it's like, that's your own fault.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, and A&M played a pretty nice schedule, too, last year. So this is where there's sometimes a disconnect. A&M wasn't a factor. So if they would have beaten Texas and got in, and people could have said something, but probably couldn't have because they would have beat a top 3 ranked Texas team at the time. But, yeah, Texas got there with a type schedule that I haven't generally seen in the SEC, and most of us hadn't. And it wasn't just them. It could have been any of several teams that if they had gotten there, we would have said that about. So that's my point. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just them.
The one that's really got a beef is Oklahoma. I mean, they got completely screwed with the scheduling.
Yeah, they did. And that's what's so interesting is the Texas and Oklahoma. Like, if I'm OU, how did you get, you know, they always make the, you know, they were doing it yesterday. They're like doing the little brother routine with Texas and A&M. And it's like, and little brother's still better than you in basketball this year. Just credit you for winning the head-to-heads. But there's like a 35-game season that says who's the better team. And we'll find out in March, too, assuming they get there, which I think they probably punched their ticket yesterday. But Oklahoma's the one getting treated like little brother in this deal. When they come in, and Oklahoma is a football, you know, they're a proven traditional power, a blue blood program. And for that to be that big a disparity, not just for 1 year, but two, I think that's a crime. And I think they should have been a lot more, you know, a lot more tied in into like what the discrepancy and disparity was going to be between those two schedules. And they should have been more focused on not making it that different. So I do. I agree. I don't think A&M fans should be sitting there crying about it. I think OU fans should, and I think they'd have a legitimate gripe. Again, it's a big difference in how you come into this conference because you can get stepped on and buried really quickly. And when that happens, you're kind of in, it's not like you're immediately flipping that and getting back. So it's, I thought that was pretty significant. It's funny you say that though, not really beaten, having a signature win.
I mean, maybe at Michigan, that's like their big win. But Michigan was not that good.
But Michigan beat Ohio State, and it's like, so what? that's 12 weeks later in a rivalry game, but none of that mattered. And that's what I would tell Texas fans down the stretch. I'm like, your schedule sucks. But eventually it didn't matter because they beat Kentucky, who beat Georgia. They beat Kentucky, who beat Ole Miss. They beat Vandy, who beat Bama. They did that with somebody else.
They beat Arkansas, who beat Tennessee.
So they're doing those things. And then they beat A&M at Kyle Field. They beat Clemson.
They're kind of, we're national champs if you think of it like that.
That's true.
You did beat Michigan, which beat Ohio State, but
you can knock off everybody. How do we get Notre Dame out there? They beat A&M, who lost to Notre Dame.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or no, that's not the way that works.
Well, scheduling, that's the hot topic. And if you Sankey said, all right, we're going to go.
Yeah.
The only problem is we're having a tough time figuring out which three we're going to give A&M every year. Which three would you recommend?
Texas and LSU for sure. Texas, obviously. LSU, it's geographical. There's also quite a bit of history. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of businesses on both sides of the Sabine River that are Aggies and LSU, and they work together and they go to, their kids go to school together. That's a natural tie. It's not a historic rivalry, but there is a lot of history there. And a rivalry, but there's a lot of history.
Didn't a lot of Louisiana people too move to Texas with the hurricanes or
absolutely. Hurricane Harvey. But A&M used to play football against LSU every year for a long time when they were not conference mates. You've got the whole, the Jimbo Fisher thing there. Scott Woodward left A&M for LSU. A&M took John Chavis, which really worked out great. And you're all Tennessee guy. Well, I wish we could have had Tennessee Third John Chavis. Yeah, I would have taken Tennessee. When the D coordinator has a nickname that's not on third and if their nickname is third and whoever their name is, that's an automatic red flag rule. If I'm like in charge of hiring, that's one of my rules. Yeah. If their nickname is third and whatever and their D coordinator, we're going to shy away from that. Perfect red flag. It's like alarm bells and sirens going off. But the baseball rivalry is really strong, and there's been some incredible moments between those teams there. It just, the whole thing is, it's natural. I would say the only natural fits outside of Texas, which is, you have obvious and you have natural, it's LSU and Arkansas. But see, Arkansas's got to do Texas already.
Mm-hmm.
I think I see a lot of people have Arkansas and OU, right?
Yeah, I think those are the two closest, too.
Yeah.
Of all SEC. Well, I think outside of Alabama, Mississippi State.
Well, A&M in Texas.
Yeah. We tried to force Arkansas, Mizzou, but I think Arkansas would be good for A&M.
Yeah, I do, too. I if I was picking, I'd go A&M, Texas, and Arkansas, but I don't think it's going to, like, it would work that way.
Yeah.
So I think what A&M would be one of the schools that you could almost take it to the bank. It would be Texas, LSU, and Mississippi State.
Which has actually been a fairly even series.
In football, yeah.
Yeah.
It has. It has. And they're both
maroon.
They're both Adidas.
Mm-hmm. Of course he'd won Arkansas, beat him 12 out of 13.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's like me. I'm like, we got to have Vanderbilt because they're in the state. Got to have Kentucky. You know?
Get my ass away from the cowbells is what I'm saying. No, but yeah, that's, you know, they're both baseball, and
mm-hmm.
I think the basketball rivalry has been pretty even. It'd be good. I hate watching that game in person on TV. It's just too much damn maroon. And it's Adidas, and they're trying to do some trick uniform.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing? Like, both teams look like they're wearing pajamas one game. You know, it just I could do if you could get Mississippi State to kind of change colors when they play A&M, I'd be okay with it. Or maybe one team go all white and the other team all maroon, and that's just something that both teams agree on. Maybe that, but
what if they did, again, they probably won't do this, but what if they, like, mix it up and change it every so few years? Ole Miss with the Lane Kiffin stuff, if it was temporary, that could be a nice little series. There seems to be real bad blood there.
I'd like to see A&M and Ole Miss reprise that deal with Lane Kiffin. And, you know, he won the last three against A&M out the door and talks incessant shit, you know, because much like this is where I this is where I land on Lane Kiffin. I hung out with a lot of Ole Miss people last night who are like my crew, like
mm-hmm.
they're awesome. I think Lane's a damn good coach. I think he is in the perfect spot. I do not think he should leave. I think he ultimately will, and I think it will be a mistake. I think he's in the perfect spot for his personality, for his the way he builds the program, for what they're doing for him in terms of NIL. I don't think he could ask for much more. But his level of just like trolling and all that, there's part of me that's like, I think a head coach should be above that. I think these little social media accounts of these teams are lucky. Some of these people are lucky they don't end up getting just smacked by, you know, like one of these athletes or other coaches walk in there and just, you know, like who runs this account? And, you know, but they hide and they're really good at talking crap. All of them, A&M, Tennessee, Ole Miss, they're real slick. I've thought about, like, you know, find out who that is. Maybe I should hire them to run the Texags account. But man, I just picture like the smallest little Weasley smart ass in there just trolling like these athletes that pour their heart and soul, male and female, into like the sport, where they're just like blood, sweat, and tears having to be helped off the court or the field, and then there's somebody on this little social media account like, you know, sorry for your loss, or, you know, like came in and wrecked, you know, whatever, Roll Tide, you know, whatever they do, they're way more clever than that. Those people should be shut down, but especially when your head coach is the one doing it. I do have a problem with it, but I can't have too big a problem with it because this guy does that all the time. So I can't be too big of a hypocrite.
Right,
I would
right.
love to see A&M and Ole Miss. I just think if you go back and look at that football rivalry, there's been some wild ass games and like you said, they haven't played every year. They missed each other the COVID season, which sucked because That was Lane's first year, and Ole Miss was scoring, but A&M would have won that. They could have run for probably 700 yards with A-Chain and Spiller, and that was the year. You know, maybe winning that game could have pushed them from fifth to fourth and gotten them into that playoff. You know, they were 8-1, and they lost that game due to COVID. But there's been some hellacious games. Ole Miss had some wild rally at Kyle Field. That was the Shea Patterson pulled out of his red shirt game. Kiffin and A&M have had some wild games. Those three Ole Miss wins. There was a walk-off field goal. Or no, it was a field goal miss by A&M to end that one. The last time they played, that was Jimbo's last year. And then there was a shootout between Jackson Dart and Connor Wigman in his first career start at Kyle Field that they won, I think, 31-28. And then, you know, the loss that I thought really killed Jimbo was in 2021. They were coming off that great Cotton Bowl or Orange Bowl winning season in 2020, finished number four in the polls. They started slow. They lost to Mississippi State and Arkansas, oddly enough. But then they beat number one Bama. Then they beat like number 11 Auburn and Bo Nix. And they had two games left at Ole Miss and at a bad LSU team where Ed O was already fired. And they lost both of those in the closing moments, you know, down the stretch in the fourth quarter. So that game was a pretty devastating one because you would have gone New Year's Six, top five finish, backed it up with a New Year's Six. And that year they were in the process of putting together that number one class. That's where you've got to catch that momentum and really roll with it. Who's a coach this year that y'all think is in that position where it's like they're doing good and we believe, if you're a fan, you believe where it's going, but this is a season where they kind of have to flip it. They not even flip it, but like it's there for you right now. You need to take it because you've done well, but you really haven't done enough yet, and now's the time to do it.
Coach Kelly?
I think that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think another one is Billy Napier, where they finally got some momentum. The whole time he's been there, it's one step forward, two steps back. One step forward, two steps back. And now Lagway's injured.
Yeah.
How injured is he?
Yeah, it's interesting.
And if he's not ready to go, they're fucked.
Yeah.
They have no, well, they got a transfer backup, but with that schedule,
yeah, that's
they're lucky to win four games.
Yep.
Now, I think he'll be fine. I don't think it's like that bad, but who knows?
He is a yoked up, like really strong quarterback. Like he's like built like a linebacker. He always has been. It's part of what makes him such a tough runner. But sometimes.
I just had a Florida guy on. He said the same. He said, aside from a lineman,
yeah,
you look at that DJ Lagway, you couldn't tell what position he played.
No, he's could as play big running as anybody back, on linebacker. The field. He could probably be a pass rusher. He's a stud and a stud kid too. Like a great person. Like I root for that dude. I'll root for him every game except that one.
He started foundations in game two already.
Oh man, he's such cool. And the kids love him, and the players, and you know, people in the community. And it was that way when he was at Willis. I've you know, got to know his dad over the years. Super nice family. So, not negative thing to say about him. I do think though, a lot of times you're that wired up. And I used to joke with Dan Campbell about that when he was like him and other these guys that are so like strong. And it's like Shane, you, me, Mike, all three of us, we're not tearing or popping shit. Okay, there's not a lot of fast twitch and. Guys that are like just, you look over the years, these athletes that are so next level, it's like sometimes they have a harder time staying healthy.
Yeah.
They're pulling or tearing or, you know, and it's like they're just so tightly wound in some instances. So I am wondering a little bit, you had the hamstring, you have whatever's going on now. I think there may have even been something else. So it is worth watching because so much of their season and his tenure depends on how they're going to go as Lagway goes, for sure, obviously.
And I don't know if you, I don't know if you saw it. I think it was Pete Nankos who does a hell of a job.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was him. He just wrote an article that basically said they decided keeping Lagway was more valuable than like they were going to fire Napier, but they said we cannot risk losing this kid. He's that good. I mean, that's almost unheard of.
Welcome to 2025. And I'm going to tell you this. If you thought Billy Napier was the if your faith in him was such that you would have fired him without Lagway, then you should have fired him, in my opinion. Like, I just think if I'm a decision maker, if I'm an administrator, if I thought that coach is not good enough to win at Florida at the requisite level, I am firing that coach. And then I'm going to do everything I can to keep Derek Lagway, and I'm going to call my biggest donor, and I'm going to say, can you pay his NIL? Can you give to our NIL, wink, wink, it's going to allow us to keep Derek Lagway, and here's why, I mean, DJ Lagway, here's why. Derek's his dad, running back for Baylor back in the day. He's like my age. And here's why. Because if we pay him X million, it doesn't feel like it, but it's a drop in the bucket. And if we get the right coach in here with him, then we could really be on to something. And then that right coach can win a bunch in year one and year two and not suffer through this crap that most year one and year two coaches have to go. And it's on.
Maybe they would
at least tried that.
They were not fans of Kiffin, I guess. Because apparently that was really going to happen. It.
If you're the AD, though, I would make him part of the process. Say, who do you want?
Yeah.
Like NFL, we're going to build around what you want. We're going to tailor this. So
it's scary, but there maybe let him have some input just to make him feel like invested in it. But I think you nailed it with Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I believe with everything that's happened, getting Nuss to come back, you know, Coach Kelly taking some of his own money to put toward NIL. The expectations, the standards are a lot higher down there in LSU. Mm-hmm.
That's when you know it's going good. The coach is giving money to like, NIL.
You know what? You gave me a little too much.
Kirby's not giving shit to the NIL there, you know?
Yeah, it just feels like this is kind of that make or break season.
I think Jimbo's actually kicking back some NIL money for A&M.
Is he really? You just... What's he doing?
He's doing good. I really like Jimbo. I feel
like he owes me at least a small portion of that buyout.
Yeah? You helped push it across the finish line?
I think I did, yeah, on Paul's show.
Don't let Nuno...
Bi-weekly.
Don't let Nuno hear that. But yeah, no, I really... I do. I like Jimbo a lot. Actually, today, as we're sitting here talking, I don't know when y'all are doing this, but I'm going to look up the thing. It's you know, what they call it, like Jimbo Fisher Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, they have, you have Bobby Bonilla Day. You know how the Mets still paying Bobby Bo? Let me see where that was. It's I'm looking at him. It might be in my, I feel like my little Longhorn group
chat.
August
4th.
What was August 4th?
8-4.
Yeah. See, now we're even. I got you. Happy Jimbo Fisher Day. This is from Daniel Libet. Like Ribbit? Is that? There's only one B, though. Is it Libet?
Libet?
No, it's Libit. It might be Libet or Libet. I feel like it was Libet. There should be two, like Libet.
Yeah.
Happy Jimbo Fisher Day. Today we celebrate A&M giving... He does all the ads so he can get attention on it. Here I'm giving it attention. Jimbo Fisher, his annual liquidated damage remittance of $7 million, blah, 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 by March 11th of each year until 2031.
Well,
so
must be nice.
At least it's not like Bobby Bonilla, who's like still getting paid by the Mets. I don't even know how those deals work. But
speaking of being the
$7 million got today. So whatever you think. You guys are having a good day getting to hang out with me in here.
Give me at least 500, you know? Yeah. I feel like I deserve
500
this.
Bucks every March 11th.
And I feel like I'm worth it. You know what?
Yeah. But that was the hardest thing. That was such a weird deal. That was such a weird week. Just kind of knowing that I was going to break that story. Going to wait until I had a choice to make. You know, my own choice of when I had gotten to the bottom of that story of when to break that thing.
It was a Sunday morning, if I recall.
Yeah. Yeah. Sunday morning, like way before my wake up normally on a Sunday, but I was on edge. Like because I wanted that story because it was my story. Like I had it. I joke around and stuff. I'm very competitive with big stories. I want every one of them. And like Brent Zwerneman and I have been good friends for 25 years, and we always talk about it. Like we always like we're the same way. I want that. That was my story. If I got beat by anyone, I was gonna be sick. I was gonna be so pissed off. But I also didn't want to do it wrong. I wanted to respect everybody involved. I wanted to respect like the team, SEC game that night, and go to the stadium. Just kind of like it felt really weird, you know, like going, I don't think there's anyone in the chain that can stop this from happening. It's done. I don't think there was any clue on the coach or player side. I mean, even Jimbo, people always wonder that. I think, you know, he might have suspected that he needed to wing it, but just knowing that, walking around that night around that stadium, and A&M just beat the brakes off, you know, Mississippi State. They both got fired, mm-hmm. maybe the next day or a couple days apart, but it was weird. Just like, man, you could just put this tweet out right now and watch the whole stadium kind of go. You could probably hear like a buzz throughout it. It's like, man, I wanted him to know first, but you're in a fight against the, you know, the rest of the country and the rest of the media. But like, that was kind of what I had hoped to be able to do, like find out that he found out. And then, so I went to bed Saturday night late, 'cause I wanted to be like on alert. And just kind of making sure there were no rumblings out there. And I was like, I'm going to do it Sunday morning. And then got up at like 6:30, had gotten a text that like, hey, you know, from kind of the agent side. And that's when I was like, oh shit, nobody talks like the agent circle does. Once that happens, the whole world knows. And then the national media, the college football writers, and it's like, all right, we got to go. And so that was that. That was that Sunday morning.
You get it off first?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember because I did. That was what.
And then while the world lit on fire, I went to sleep, took a nap. went and got some kolaches, drank a coffee, looked at Twitter for a few minutes. I'm like, good deal. Boom, nap time.
That's when we first started experimenting with live stream, which has been a godsend for us. But because I remember it was that early because I cracked open a beer.
What's wrong with it?
7:15 in the morning, because Jimbo had gotten fired.
Oh, I was like, what are you drinking at 7:15 for? By the way, the fact that you could sit there and crack open beer at 7 a.m. And the fact that I could just sit there and literally like roll over in bed and just go, sin, and go back to sleep. When, you know, and it sucked because a lot of the, you know, you do that and then players go, well, we didn't even know. And then you have certain... some of the real sensitive people going, well, how could you do that? And they're the same ones that, you know, when I didn't report that I thought Slosh was leaving, they were the ones that are like, you owed it. You know, if you knew. Now, when I found out that, let's just say that there was a real likelihood, chance isn't the right word, likelihood. And in my mind, I thought it was going to happen. Thought, wasn't 1,000,000%, but I fully expected that, like, there was a behind-the-scenes agreement and that Slosh and his best buddy, he had taken a job with him with CDC. He does a great job as Texas AD. Mm-hmm. Like, you put rivalry aside, he's done great things there. But there was with that information that came to me that I could not confirm directly from the source, no matter how much. And I was, there were a couple times I brought it up directly and said, dude, why am I still reading this stuff about Texas? Like, what's going on? Like, you know, and I even said, you know, there's one way to stop it if you care about this World Series run, right? There's one way. You know, all you gotta do, but you don't want me to say that and hang me out to, you know, I made it awkward enough, you know. But I went immediately, kind of told, I directly told Trev Alberts that, hey, I think you probably got an issue here, you know, with the baseball coach, which was kind of out of left field. This was weeks earlier. And then you let people do their jobs, you know, as best they can. If the coach is already gone, he's already gone, and you've been the AD for a month or two. It's, you know, it's kind of like, wow, that's a fun one to have to get thrown into when he's probably already out the door. But those, that was an interesting time because a lot of people go, well, why didn't you just run out and report it? You know, I thought about it, but it wasn't, to me, there was a process that could happen, and I didn't know how closed the door was. It wasn't like I could go up and go, is it, you know, the door felt like it was closing, might be closed, but you didn't know what. So to race out with that info, I thought would have been irresponsible. Probably would have been right, but it wasn't for sure. And the flip side of that was those same people that were screaming that after he left are the same ones that, had I said that in late April, and that team would have gone from number one in the country to not getting to Omaha or not making a run in Omaha, whatever it was, it would have been like that writer or that reporter made it about him and ruined it for these kids. So it's always, you know, and I think a lot of media people listening to this would understand that kind of dilemma where it's like, you're going to be damned if you do and damned if you don't. And especially, that's especially true when you're running like fan sites and things like that. And I remember a day and time where these fan sites had the people that were doing it had like no outside credibility or respect. And they would never be on the bottom scroll of, you know, ESPN. They would never be on Feinbaum, and they would never be getting any credit, you know, talked about or being on the SEC network or, you know, those days have changed. It's still just, I do think people that don't understand, like, yes, it is a little different for these people running these fan sites and kind of how you attack these major breaking stories. And it happens all the time. I mean, look, let's be real. People are going to be coming after, you know, A&M's trying to finish his basketball season, and Buzz Williams, it's openly talked about that Indiana is pursuing him. The hard part, people think that's happening. That is not something that's done, but Indiana is certainly going to, there's no secret that they're pursuing. The question is, there's pursuit, and there's my first target, there's my second target.
Yeah.
There's my third target. I remember
of it's agents, though, too, right?
Hell yeah, it is. Hell
yeah. More money.
And most of them can't keep quiet, I'm telling you. And it works for them. It works. It's like a great, it's like, you know, they drum up all the stuff, and it's great. And then they sit back, and, you know, there's no one better than that than Jimmy Sexton, famously. I mean, we all know how deft he is at operating in those circles. But look, I remember sitting with Billy, speaking as we're sitting here for Kentucky playing tonight, sitting there with Billy Gillespie way back when at an Outback Steakhouse in College Station, and Arkansas's trying to get him. And he just took A&M to the Sweet 16 for the first time in eons. 2 years earlier, they were 0-16 in the conference, and AC Law, and he's like, I'm like, man, you would be making such a mistake to leave here right now. Like, this is what you've built. You'll have a statue here, which I think Slosh would have too. Two World Series in 3 years and national championship game. Lose by one run to y'all's Vols. You got Morgan Wallen, Peyton parading around. Y'all have them parading. I see he's sitting courtside right now. Yeah. Like, you know, Tennessee only thinks they're topping. I was sitting in those seats yesterday. Okay, just let's be real clear, Morgan. But I was sitting there and I'm like, man, you would have a statue. Like, in this team you have coming back and the way you're recruiting, like, yeah, Arkansas is, it's great, but you could do that here. I mean, nobody y'all know, nobody really cares about Auburn basketball before Bruce Pearl was there. I mean, I know they did when they had Barkley and when they had, you know, these other, but like those crowds weren't there. Alabama doesn't give two shits about basketball when they don't have Nate Oates doing what they're doing. You guys have had down times in basketball. Yeah. We're all in football. We're all at football schools. But I said, you know, okay, we're going back and forth. He's playing devil's advocate. He's trying to just see what I say about it. And he's like, I got to take this. And he gets up and he walks outside. He's gone for like 30 minutes. And he comes back and he goes, so you don't think I should go to Arkansas? I said, no, I don't think it would be a mistake, you know. And he said, what about Kentucky? And I was just like, oh. I'm like, oh, man. I go, all right, well, this has been fun era. Let me go put together the coaching hot board. It was tough, but it was a tough one to answer. And, you know,
it's like I'm just getting up at 6:30 a.m.
Another 6:30. Make sure you just not do it at 6 a.m., please. But, yeah, so that it's fun with these things, but there's been times in this job where you're like, damn, this is a crazy, crazy path I've willingly walked down, but it's cool. I love it, but it's wild. And the SEC makes it wilder.
Yeah.
It makes it wilder and crazier every day. And it's not just, it has made A&M more of a wild roller coaster scene, even though like people could say, no, it's always been, and there's this, and this. I'm like, no, when you got into this league, shit changed. The intensity of it, the, you know, obviously all the game day environments, but it was really like the pressure week to week, season to season, the pressure on these hirings, the amount of money and the donations that went up in the stadium, but then how much responsibility and how much expectations rise because of that and what you're held to. Like, I've seen everything about that place, this place. I say we're not there right now, but everything about A&M and Aggie Athletics it's not even the same entity that it was before they went to the SEC. And it's interesting, and now there's like this whole nother level to it when you bring Texas in. And Paul asked me about that yesterday, and I'm like, it's funny, 2 days ago he asked me about it, and it happened again yesterday. They haven't yet, they're never going to adjust to where they're okay with losing to Texas, but no one, there is such vitriol and such hatred, and then it causes some of the most, it's like, I think it's completely rational and understandable to be livid when you lose to your rival in anything. And then when you lose and you lose your coach to him and you lose in football and then you lose 2 out of 3 in basketball, I don't ever want to be in a situation where A&M fans don't care about that. I don't ever want to be in a world where, like, oh no, I don't want to react to that because Texas fans might, you know, relish in it on the phone, on social media. Well, then log your ass off. I want everyone pissed and hopping mad every time. But rationality goes completely out the window in that, man, this basketball team still has a hell of a lot to play for.
Yeah.
And A&M beat the brakes off Texas in Austin last year in baseball. They could have lost that game. They beat Texas in the regional when it mattered. And at the end of the day, the Longhorns weren't in the postseason. A&M was playing for a natty in baseball. Like, it, I think one year where the Aggies lost to Texas in baseball, they came back and double dipped or beat them and knocked them out of Omaha. They might have beat them that year. I think maybe they beat them and then went back. But they're not used to playing them every year again yet. And the fact that, you know, they lost the season series in basketball and then lost in football, it's like, it leads to some pretty spectacular meltdowns, as it should. But I think for everyone's health and sanity, you know, we need to start seeing A&M winning some of these head-to-heads.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is, you know, they're better than Texas in baseball last year. They're better than them in basketball this year. Texas is better in football. Like, you gotta start winning the head-to-heads just so sanity can prevail. And put a little pressure on them.
Yeah.
Make them lose some games. See how they react. See how irrational. You could have got a coach fired yesterday. You could have knocked them out of the tournament. Mm-hmm. I mean, they wouldn't be playing today, and then Rodney Terry era would be over. So I love that the rivalry's back. I want to see more success on A&M's side, obviously. But it really, I think it took this whole SEC thing for Texas A&M. There's a whole nother level now of, I don't want to say pressure, but just like the need to get it done and the need to be great, because you can cruise around in this other conference and be like, yeah, we're in the SEC. You're not. You're in the Big 12. We're not worried about you. We don't play you. We're in the League of Champions over here. Well, it's not the case anymore. Well, so it added, I think it just took that pressure to perform up a whole nother level, which is a good thing for A&M. If you take away the frustration of it after a game like yesterday or after what happened November 30th, that's a great thing for A&M.
Well, there's always going to be pressure in this league, Billy. So, final thing for you. I really wanted to close on this. Mike Elko, how confident are you that he is the right guy? Because at times last year, I mean, I thought he was like a masterful coach.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, he's putting Wigman in for Missouri. That is the height of stupidity.
Yeah.
Wigman looked like $1 million. He makes the switch at LSU. That was a genius decision. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you lose at the end. We've already kind of covered that, but you know, the narrative would have completely changed had they won a game or two different. How confident are you? And I know you said they don't always go 8-4, which is true. But I think the statistic, I don't know if you've seen this, shout out Brad Powers.
Yep.
But the stat is, I believe 22 of the last 24 seasons, mm-hmm. A&M's lost 4 or more games.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. So how confident are you that Mike Elko can be the guy
bowl games
to break that?
I'm very confident. I've learned, as we talk about like time doing this, not to speak in too many absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I just knowing how he operates day to day in terms of knowing his grasp and understanding of things like the portal, of NIL. His willingness and ability to fundraise on the NIL front, how he works with Trev Alberts and vice versa, how he works with other areas of power at A&M, whether it be the Board of Regents, you know, or on up the chain, or like I said, with individual donors. That dude gets it. And he's really smart. Here's the thing. He's really smart, but he doesn't. You know, he's really smart, but he allows his other guys to have input where he's not the smartest guy in the room. And I don't think that's always an easy thing to do when you are as smart. I had an interesting conversation during Super Bowl week with Matt Patricia, who's now at Ohio State. We may need to remind him he has to beat a certain team next September in Columbus. But call some damn defenses, Patricia. You got Sark and Arch coming in. But that guy's a nuclear engineer, and Elko's an Ivy League guy. You probably are the smartest person in most rooms you're in, but don't ever believe that about yourself. And he doesn't. He takes input. He asks questions a lot. And I think his relationship with his players, he's a player's coach that will old school get into the guys when they need it. You know, he's a player's coach where he'll walk off the practice field with his arm around the guys and they'll be laughing and joking. But, you know, don't have a good practice and see how that goes and don't perform. You know, he's a tough dude. He's a tough dude that the players like and respect. So I like what he's got going. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's guaranteed because of this league and this schedule. And he's going to have to, you know, these first couple years tinker and figure out what and who's working and what and who's not and get that roster exactly where he wants it, because I think it's far from it as you just go into year two, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot better than it was a season ago. I think as I sit here now, people, if you go back and look a year from now, like NFL draft numbers, combine invites, things like that, you'll start to see like there's a lot more talent coming in than there was on the roster when he got here. So I don't think it's just boom. I think a fair, not goal. I don't think if you're in a football building, you would never set a goal to go 9-3. But I think a barometer to say that's a big success would be if they went, not big, it's a really, it's an important, noteworthy step if they went 9-3 on that schedule this year, mm-hmm. in year two. Because they need to, because, man, nobody's waiting. Nobody's idling and letting you get up to speed. They're all going to blow mm-hmm. past you if you don't. So I think it's important for him and them to take the step this year, and I think they will. And so as we wrap this up, what do you want from me? 9-3. Boom. There you go.
Perfect. Anything else, Trey?
I think the over-under is like
7.5, I think.
Yeah, why not?
Probably.
Why eight. Not? Shit.
August 1 of the 9 is Texas, right?
That would help me a lot.
Would you take 8-4 with a win over Texas?
We didn't even ask about Arch Manning.
That's the toughest question that you've asked, because there's no right way to answer that. But yeah, 8-4 versus 9-3. Damn, that would be. Because that means you'd be 9-2 going into Texas, and you got to look at that schedule and look at some of the wins you could have accrued getting there. But damn,
be a bubble.
Would I be able to just quit? Would I be able to quit Twitter after that game and magically text that, oh, text X doesn't work tonight, guys. I'm sorry.
Grab your jumper cables. We got a victory.
If we win, Shane, you better bring that wheelchair down to Austin. We'll get you to the third floor of some bar on 6th Street.
You got it.
Before you go, Billy, let all the Texas fans know how to follow you on social media.
I want other fan bases. I like mixing it up with them. I'm too friendly with everybody else. Like, I'm going around this SEC tournament and just, like, I'm friendly with all the other fan bases. Tennessee in particular, I really get along with the Vols fans. And then LSU is probably number two where we go out. The OU fans think they, y'all, you're OU team. Or who is it? Which one of y'all? You've adopted Missouri. You've adopted OU.
Yeah.
You kind of had to, right?
Yep.
OU fans, there's a bunch of, like, amateur high school wrestling team type fans where they just, they want to turn everything into a fight. look at you. You look like, they're the nasty. But then God forbid you should say Brent Venables might be in trouble. Don't say that. If there's one thing we will say that I've said the whole time, I said Texas was so much more ready to enter this league.
Mm-hmm.
Personnel-wise, and I think head coach-wise, coaching staff, not just the head coach, than Chet Venables was.
And really just on the line of scrimmage more than anything else. You know what? All about that line of scrimmage. Oklahoma's line of scrimmage was a disaster.
I like that quarterback. Yeah. And I actually like some of the moves Venables made with his staff in the offseason. He hired my boy Jim up there, too, to run to be their GM.
Mm-hmm.
He's the real deal as a person and as a football guy. But I don't know, man. Like, again, you started off in a significant hole. I don't know how they beat Alabama, but.
And they beat their ass, too.
Whipped their ass. They beat Bama and Auburn and didn't do anything else. And I don't know how they – I watched that Auburn game. I still don't know how they won that one.
Kip six.
I mean, that was a ridiculous – yeah, that was just what a ridiculous finish there. Have we remembered the Auburn quarterback's name yet?
Peyton Thorne.
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze's best friend till the season started.
He had to
then
be.
He hated him.
They each other all offseason, he said. Now it's –
God, and he froze him out.
Anyone else you want to throw under the bus before you leave?
Who else? Who else we got? I mean, just OU, really. And LSU.
South
and,
Carolina.
I like Beamer, man.
You didn't even mention him in the three, so I figured you're just afraid of him or
What, the three?
The three permanent rivals.
Oh, you guys, yeah. They beat us a couple of times. Let's get that damn Bonham Trophy out of here. Is that what it's called? No, old, you know, old Buttercup Trophy. Get rid of that one. Nobody knows where that is. It's like, I'm trying to think if there's anybody. I like throwing Brian Kelly under the bus.
Yeah.
Do that all day and twice on Sundays. I think he's got... They're doing a lot of talking again on the Bayou. They'll have a lot to prove, so we'll see. They got to, you know, I think they, this is a big year for them. Like,
their fans are
ready.
How
do they feel about 9-3 in Baton Rouge this year? I think they hate that.
Failure.
If A&M's Texas A&M 4, LSU's like,
yeah.
How do you fit, like, LSU 9-3? You can't, but they're a lot of 9-3s.
Yeah.
Whereas A&M's a lot of 8-4s.
Every LSU fan I spoke to said, if they don't make the playoff, fire his ass. That includes T-Bob. He said it.
I love T-Bob. He's the most honest son of a bitch. He just looks. Yeah, he can't do it. He can't not be honest. And I love that about him. And I think he always, if you listen to him, really, he makes some great points. Always win, lose, or draw for the Tigers. But I agree. Like one point about LSU. A&M's been in the SEC 13 years. And fact check me. I might be wrong. You use that stat of the 22 out of 24 years of A&M. That's obviously including bowl games. If you include bowl games, I don't think there's been one season. I think there's been one season that LSU has finished in 13 years in the SEC has finished with less than 3 losses in the regular season. And it was 2019. Not the right. Ended the year at less than 3 in the loss column, and it was 2019. The first year the Aggies joined the SEC was 2012, and LSU went 10-2. They might have won a bowl game that year. I'm not positive. So at most it's 2 out of 13, but it might be 1 out of 13 that they finished a year losing less than 3 games. I know it's – I'm not forget A&M. We're not – I'm just saying that is one program that the results in the last 12 years, 13 years, with one exception, have not matched up to the stature with which they're treated, I think, by the national media, in some cases their own fan base. I don't think those match up. And in defense of the fan base, they are demanding more. I mean, that's not an insult. I think the fans understand that I'm right. I'm spitting, like, it's facts. I'm not spitting facts. They're actually facts. I'm not even spitting them. I'm regurgitating them. I think they know that they're demanding more because it's like, yeah, you guys for a long time have been good, not great.
Well, when you win 3 national championships with 3 different coaches
in a row,
you say, it's not the coaches, it's the program.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not the coaches, it's the program, it's the recruiting base, it's a terrific fan base, yeah. No matter what they're throwing at you. an outstanding, supportive fan base. So, yeah, like, we're going to give you all this, and you're going to be right here in the middle of Louisiana, where you're the only show in a loaded talent state. We expect you to do what freaking Edo and Les Miles did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fair. Damn sure fair to say get your ass in the playoffs. So
they better.
There you
it.
Go. So now we've got Venables. We got. I'm pissed off. What? OU, Texas, and LSU now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think LSU fans would actually be pissed. But
I think that's fair.
Yeah, and I think the OU thing's fair too. Like what? Like they've been put in a tough spot, but I just question if they made the right hire. That's all.
Mm-hmm. All right, Billy, can't thank you enough, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. You guys want to come get some stamps? Let's go. It's 5 o'clock. It's time.